We're going to call this conference committee of Senate file 888 to order. It's about 20 minutes after the hour, May 1st, 2015. A quorum is present. I want to welcome everybody to the conference committee. Madam Chair, look forward to having upcoming discussions and meetings. And for today, I thought it'd be good to have Mr. Lundeen and Ms. Roberts run us through the change item spreadsheet, and then have Ms. James and Mr. Shepherd go through the language in the side-by-sides, which are before you. After that, if we can see if any members have any discussion. With that, I think we'll probably do to have a few introductions. I'll introduce myself and pass it on to the chair, and we'll just go around the table. I'm Tom Saxog. I'm chairman of State Government Finance and Military and Veterans Affairs in the Senate. I represent Senate District 5, which includes Grand Rapids, Bemidji, Walker, with the Leech Lake Indian Reservation and the Chippewa National Forest in the middle. I'm retired independent insurance agent for 36 years. I've been married for 44 years to Nancy, who shot an 82 yesterday, and I'm down here. Oh yeah, right. I have two kids, two grandkids. My daughter's a teacher, my son's a professional musician. I look forward to the fruitful discussions that we'll have here to resolve the differences in our two bills. Chairman?
I'm Sarah Anderson. I am the House Chair of State Government Finance. I represent the area of Plymouth, which is a western suburb of the Minneapolis area, and I am married to a school teacher who teaches physics and calculus and chemistry and all those good things. I have one son who is a first grader, and be interested to hear the music that your son maybe can give to us at some point.
Adam Seidel, Republican CA for State Government Finance.
Members, I'm Brian Cook, GOP Caucus Research for State Government Finance and Veterans Affairs.
I'm Helen Roberts from the House Fiscal Staff.
Mark Shepherd from the House Research Department.
I'm Representative Bob Lunan, handling the Shakopee area, and I sit on the Gov Finance Committee. I'm also on the Commerce Committee and the Jobs and Energy and Development Committee as well. Married with four adult children, one of which my third one is just finishing up his last year law school and has actually been able to do a little bit of lobbying around, and is fascinated with the place. And I'm looking forward to the discussion and the conversations and learning.
I'm Carolyn Lane. I represent Columbia Heights, St. Anthony, and New Brighton. This is my fifth term. I have five kids spread across the country. One with two of the grandkids are in Columbia Heights. The others are California, Massachusetts, Georgia, and Washington, D.C. My youngest daughter is graduating from law school in D.C., and thank goodness she has a job that's going to pay off those loans.
Representative Tim O'Driscoll represents the Central Minnesota area, Sartell, Sauk Rapids, St. Stephen, Holdingport, and townships in between, on different committees and commissions with a number of senators and members of the House here. So I'm looking forward to our conference committee.
Jim Geldman, DFL Caucus Research.
Amy Strinney, Senate Republican Research.
Ryan Majerus, Senate Majority Research.
Mitch Bergeron, Committee Administrator for Senator Saxon.
Lexi Stengel, Senate Counsel.
Stephanie James, Senate Counsel.
Kevin Lundeen, Senate Fiscal Analyst.
Melissa Wicklund, and I represent District 50, which is Bloomington and Richfield. And I'm also on State and Local Government Policy Committee, and as well as Health and Human Services Policy and Education, E12 Finance and Policy. Have two kids. I'm married to an engineer, and I was an electrical engineer for a while in my career. And my kids are, one lives in Washington, D.C., teaching preschoolers, and I have a son who's in his second year at UMD, so glad to be here.
Yeah. Hi, I'm Senator Jim Carlson. I represent District 51, which is most of Eagan and about a third of Burnsville. And I'm on, of course, on the State Department's and government finance and what is the Veterans also committee. And I'm the vice chair, and I'm also the chair of the Veterans Finance Committee. I'm a retired 3M engineer. I have a retired a wife that's retired German teacher, 2004 German Teacher of the Year in Minnesota, and a daughter who is an attorney in Los Angeles. She's she's a partner on the in the company of Alston Bird, and a son who is a computer engineer, and he works for Facebook. So I've lost all of my Minnesota children connections here. They moved to a higher tax state. But and so I'm looking forward to working on this budget to make the state of Minnesota better.
Is that all?
That's all.
Okay.
One more. I'm sitting next to Senator Jim Metzen.
Senator Jim Metzen, I chair the Commerce Committee in the Minnesota Senate. I'm on the Rules Committee. I live in South St. Paul, represent South St. Paul, West St. Paul, Mendota, Mendota Heights, Invergrove Heights. That's it. I'm happy to be here.
All right. I'm Senator Sandy Pappas. I'm Senate President. I'm also chair of two rules subcommittees, Budget and Personnel and Ethics, and I'm vice chair of the Pensions Commission with Representative Driscoll. I see there's a number of Pension Commission members here on the conference committee, which is great. I represent inner city neighborhoods in St. Paul. I live downtown. I walk to work, weather permitting. I have been married to my husband for 38 years, so I've got a ways to go. I'll never catch up. I'll tell you, no one will ever catch up with me and my grandchildren. I have three daughters and 18 grandchildren, all living in Israel. And if you beg me, I'll show you pictures. So looking forward to the conference committee.
All right, thank you, everybody. I think at this point we'll have Mr. Lundeen and Ms. Roberts run through that spreadsheet. We can run this any way we want, but I thought probably most of the questions should point to clarification on both the spreadsheet and the side-by-sides. If we want to get any other major discussions, I thought we'd probably wait till after. But with that, I'll turn it over to you. However you're going to do it.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Roberts and I will just, I'll kind of run through some of the Senate provisions, and she'll run through the House, and we'll kind of go back and forth as we cover the various agencies. The spreadsheet that we're taking a look at is the change items spreadsheet. It's not the bigger detailed one, but the shorter one that you should have in your packets. Starting out at the top of the spreadsheet, the first is the change items for the legislature. And the Senate has included statutory appropriations for the Senate office building rental payments in the amount of 12.9. The Senate also included an increase to their budget of 3%. And didn't make any changes to the House budget. The Senate left it at the base level. We did include, or the bill does include, a rider about the House vacating the chamber for the Capitol renovation and some costs if this doesn't take place. And then moving down for the Office of Legislative Auditor, the Senate bill does include half of the increase that the OLA came forward with. And the Senate bill also includes a 1.8% increase to the OLA and to the rest of the LCC's operating budget. Moving on down, the Senate did not include anything for the administrative rules system request through the revisor's office. And the Senate did include half of the request for the IT services and staff that came from the revisor's office. And lastly, the Senate did include $35,000 a year for this biennium for the Data Practices Commission to provide a part of a staffing. And I'll turn it over to Ms. Roberts.
Members, for the House position on the legislative funding,
you will see on line 7, there's a 5% reduction to the Senate operating budget. There's also a 5% reduction to the House operating budget. And on line 11, there's a 5% reduction to the overall LCC operating budget. In addition to those reductions, there is increased funding provided on line 9 for the Office of the Legislative Auditor. This includes their staff funding request and also some funding for the fiscal note function, that is the oversight function being moved to that office in this bill. Funding is provided beginning in fiscal year 17 for the Revisor's Office Administrative Rules System. And then also their requested funding for IT services and staff. And there's on line 14, you'll see there's a reduction of $196,000. This is for elimination of the Legislative Water Commission.
Questions? All right, Quan.
And I'll continue on. So those are the changes in the House bill for the operating budgets for the legislature. You'll see below that there is a group called Legislative Carry Forward Cancellations. Those are one-time cancellations from the carry forward accounts that each the House, the Senate, and the LCC have. And then finally, for the legislature, you'll see there's $2 million that is a transfer from the State Employee Insurance Group reserves to a rulemaking impact fund.
Okay, taking a look next on line 27 for the governor's office. The Senate bill does include the increases that the governor requested, the 1.8%, and then some additional staff to deal with legal emergency preparedness and constituent work.
And the House bill has a reduction for the governor's office of 6.5% from the base. And you'll also see on line 32 under the special revenue fund that there is a cap on the amount that the governor's office is able to charge agency for personnel costs within that office.
Next on line 35 is the state auditor. The Senate bill does include the full requests that the auditor had and the governor included for the staff retention and then also the technology staffing. The Senate did provide $35,000 a year for the local government infrastructure stress study. This was originally a higher request, and we heard some testimony from the auditor requesting $35,000, which would pay for some software related to the mapping, and apparently the auditor was going to be leveraging some support with the U of M and some foundations for the remainder of the funding.
For the House position on the state auditor, you'll see on line 39, there's a base reduction of approximately 6.5%. I'll also note that there is on line 41, you'll see noted the county audits being permitted to be done by CPAs. That's House File 495, and the impact from this is tracked in the tails, both on the expenditure and revenue side.
Moving down next to the Attorney General, the Senate included the base budget there with no changes.
And the House has a base reduction of 6.5% or $2.9 million.
And then with the Secretary of State, the Senate included the base appropriation there with no changes. There is one bill that both the House and Senate have that was tracking some costs. It was dealing with some changes related to fees. And there were some small IT costs in there that are paid out of a statutory appropriated fund, technology fund, so that takes care of the small programming costs.
And the House bill has a reduction for the Secretary of State of 6.5%.
Next is the Campaign Finance and Public Disclosure Board. The Senate bill includes the 1.8% compensation adjustment, and both the House and Senate include the website redevelopment cancellation and appropriation. This is, if you recall, is where we canceled the fiscal year 15 appropriation because the office didn't feel they were going to be able to spend it before the end of the biennium, and then reappropriated it in fiscal year 16.
And the House position on the Campaign Finance Board is a base reduction of about $107,000 per year. And also on line 57, you'll see the elimination of the public subsidy program. So those are the general fund savings from eliminating that program.
Turning to the next page of the spreadsheet, administrative hearings at the top. The Senate included the 1.8% compensation adjustment and also included the requests related to the data practices hearing costs and the campaign violations hearing costs.
And the House bill includes the funding for the data practices hearing costs and campaign violations hearing costs. It does not have the 1.8% operating adjustment.
And then on line 65 for minute services, the Senate bill includes the compensation 1.8% adjustment.
And the House bill is a base funding for minute services.
And I should point out both bills do include the cash flow for the IT consolidation. That's very similar to what we did 2 years ago. Moving down next on line 73 for the Department of Administration, the Senate bill included the 1.8% operating adjustment. The Senate bill also included funding for the equity and public contracting related to the veterans, minority, and women. There was nothing included for the SMART expansion. The targeted group business disparity study, the Senate included the funding that was requested there. The Senate also included funding to help agencies with the Olmstead plan, and that funding is in there one time as requested. Line 80, the Senate also included a reduction to the in lieu of rent. It was a $1 million reduction starting in fiscal year 17, and later when we get to the language, you'll see that we are requesting the Department of Administration to do an evaluation of this appropriation in light of all the capital renovations and relocations that are taking place. The next item is local government data practices training. There's one-time funding for the biennium in the amount of $200,000. The Senate bill also includes the state agency's accommodation reimbursement proposal and includes $500,000 a year in general fund dollars that will be transferred into the special revenue account. And then moving down to public broadcasting, the Senate includes a number of increases over the base. For the public TV grants, it's $300 a year one time. For the public TV matching grants, it's just the base funding. For the NPR equipment grants, it's $250 a year over the base one time. For the AMPRS community service grants, it's $200,000 a year one time over the base. And then the AMPRS radio equipment grants is $50,000 over the base. And the AMPRS emergency equipment grants is also one time, $200,000 a year over the base.
And the House bill for the Department of Administration, going back to line 75, you'll see it includes some funding for the equity and public contracting. This is for IT support only. And then on line 79, there's a base reduction of $3 million for the biennium. And I should note, I just realized that the House bill does actually allocate this reduction through the programs of Department of Administration. So there is a reduction to the in lieu of rent, and I can adjust the spreadsheet so that those are shown on the same line. For the state agency's accommodation reimbursement, the Senate has this in a general fund appropriation, but the House has this from a special revenue fund from contributions from the agencies, and that's on line 91. And then you will also see that the House bill contains reductions to the various public broadcasting grants, $100,000 for the public TV equipment grants, $778,000 for the matching grants, $206,000 for NPR equipment grants, and then $210,000 for the AMPRS community service grants and $34,000 for the equipment grants.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Is the House position, is that from ongoing money, I assume? That's from the base, ongoing money.
Are you asking about the NPR or the public broadcasting?
About all of those public broadcasting, where the Senate has additional money, it's one-time money, and the House is reducing it. I assume they're reducing it from some kind of base fund.
Mr. Chair and Senator, yes, that's correct.
Okay, the next item on line 93 is the cap board, and the Senate included the 1.8% operating adjustment.
And the House bill has a base reduction of $10,000 per year.
The next item for Minnesota Management and Budget, the Senate bill included the 1.8% compensation adjustment. The Senate bill also included $3 million for the biennium to maintain the enterprise systems. This is related to the SWIFT accounting system, the budget system, fiscal notes. And the Senate also included half of the requested funding to enhance enterprise-level services. This was a request to provide some uniform guidance to agencies on things such as vets preference, succession planning, accessibility, and so forth.
The House bill has a reduction to Minnesota Management and Budget of 8.5% to their base, and then you'll also see the return on investment funding of $156,000 per year for House File 795.
I should point out the Senate does have the return on investment. It just wasn't in this bill. It's in the Health and Human Services bill. So this is one of the jurisdictional issues that will have to be sorted out by leadership where that's going to fall. And then moving down to the Department of Revenue, the Senate bill includes the 1.8% compensation adjustment. The Senate bill includes $4 million for the biennium for maintaining and enhancing the tax system.
And the House bill for Department of Revenue has a $1.8 million reduction.
And then moving to page 3 of the spreadsheet, at the top is the Gambling Control Board. There was a decrease in the base appropriation that the Senate picked up. This was because of the current revenues were not supporting the base that was being carried forward. And then there were some other changes going on that freed up some more money in the governor's bill, I guess I'm getting myself confused here. The governor's bill was increasing the regulatory fee on charities, and the Senate bill did not pick that up. Rather, on line 120, we put in general fund dollars to make up that difference.
And for the House position on the Gambling Control Board, you're not seeing any change items here because the appropriation from the Special Revenue Fund is at the base level. I believe that was a holding position as discussions continued on the various proposals related to that board.
The next is the Racing Commission. There was a request for some one-time general fund money that the Senate did include, $341,000 for the biennium. And then there were also some changes related to the Class C licenses that would bring in some additional revenue. And so that additional revenue of $182,000 is showing up here.
And the House bill does have the additional operating revenues from the Class C license changes, but does not include the general fund operating increase.
The next item is the Amateur Sports Commission. The Senate did include the operating budget increase that was requested of $34,000 a year. And the Senate also included $4 million one-time appropriation to deal with the Mighty Ducks indoor air quality improvements for public ice facilities.
And the House bill for the Amateur Sports Commission has a reduction of $13,000 per year.
And then moving down to the Black Minnesotans Council, the Senate did include the compensation 1.8%.
And the House bill, and maybe I should just cover all the councils or explain what's going on with the councils on the House side. For fiscal year 16 and 17 only, the funding for the four councils is moved from the general fund to the special revenue fund, and you'll see on page R31 of the side-by-side, there is a new fund set up that is funded through contributions from the State Employee Insurance Fund, a one-time transfer from the an appropriation in fiscal year 15 for the PEEP fund. And then additionally, there's $871,000 that would remain in the state campaign fund. And since the public subsidy program is abolished, that money would not be needed. And so those transfers are created this new fund, and the appropriations for fiscal year 16 and 17 only are made from that fund. In the tails for 18 and 19, the funding would go back to the general fund.
Chairman, would you explain that a little bit? Maybe I'm the only one that doesn't understand it, but the transfer of the appropriation from the new Ethic Councils Fund, what is that?
Mr. Chair and Senator Metzen, you'll see there's language in the bill that creates an Ethnic Councils account in the Special Revenue Fund, and that account is funded from three sources: a $2.2 million transfer from the CGIP insurance reserves, $871,000 from the remaining funds in the state campaign fund, and then $294,000 from a fiscal year 15 appropriation for the PEEP program. And those amounts are all transferred and deposited into this new account, and then the appropriations for the councils are made out of that account for fiscal year 16 and 17 only. And the appropriations are made at the base level for all of the councils.
Oh. All right. excuse me. If you take it away from somewhere else, well, we'll talk about that later. It's got to be hurting in some other areas if you take the money from the pension. Was it a pension part of it, 2.8 or something? Or what was it?
No, you're right, but you're also right. Let's discuss that a little bit later.
Yeah, okay. We won't get too far into the weeds this afternoon.
No.
Yeah. All right.
Okay. moving on then to the Minnesota Historical Society. The Senate included the 1.8% compensation adjustment, and then also included some additional dollars. The Historical Society did have a request for additional dollars, and a portion of that was funded one time in the salaries and programs area. $1 million for the biennium is being appropriated for the digital preservation and access, and then also $500,000 for the biennium for the history education. Moving down, the Minnesota Military Museum Archivist is funded at $100,000 one time, and the Farm America, who was asking for some additional dollars for some capital improvements, is funded one time at $200,000.
And the House bill for the Historical Society, beginning on line 160, there's $1.5 million for the digital preservation and access, $150,000 for the history education. And then the House and Senate actually have the same position on the military museum of $100,000 one-time increase. Hmm. And then the House bill has a $75,000 one-time increase for Farm America.
And then I think at the bottom of the spreadsheet on line 169 is the Minnesota Arts Board. The Senate did include the 1.8% compensation adjustment. And other than that, I the House just provided the base funding there. Moving to the next page of the spreadsheet is the Humanities Center. The Senate included the general operating support increase of 99.
Sorry. Helen, do you have something to add?
Mr. Chair and members, sorry, I did miss one item on the Historical Society on the House side. On line 167, there's a one-time limit on the historical preservation's grants funding. This is an open and statutory appropriation, and there's language in the bill eliminating that funding just in fiscal year 16. Sorry about that.
Okay, I'll pick up with the Minnesota Humanities Center. As I had mentioned, the general operating support increases included. I should point out on these other items that the House has included in this bill, the Senate has included two of them in other bills. The grant to the Minnesota Council on Economic Education is in the Senate E-12 bill, and the healthy eating is included in the Health and Human Services bill in the Senate.
And then the additional funding that the House position has, and in addition to those items already mentioned, is $250,000 one time for the Everyone Wins Reading Program.
Next is the Accountancy Board. The Senate included the 1.8% compensation adjustment and also included $10,000 one time related to the notification to licensees of the proposed statutory changes in the bill.
And the House position also included that $10,000 change related to the licensees. I should also note, just for the rest of the occupational boards, the House position is at base level funding.
And the Senate did provide the 1.8% to the Architectural and Engineering Board, as well as to the Cosmetology Examiners Board. The Senate bill also did pick up language that dealt with some licensing and fee modifications and has appropriated $1.2 million a year to the Cosmetology Board for that. That money is essentially going to pay for an additional 13 inspectors. And I've also listed here the mobile salon regulations. The fiscal note that we got with that had a cost of it, of a part of an inspector, but we were told by the Cosmetology Board if they got the additional 13 inspectors, we would not have to track a cost for that. But there is some revenue when this becomes effective in the next biennium that will show up at the end of the spreadsheet. The next is the Barber Examiners Board, which has the 1.8% compensation adjustment. And then the next is the Human Rights Department, which I should point out is another jurisdictional issue. The Senate does not have that in the state government area, so that is something that needs to be sorted out.
And the House bill does include funding for the Human Rights Department with two changes. There's approximately 6% base reduction, and then there is also $80,000 per year designated for the St. Cloud office. The next item is a House-only change provision. The House reduces the contingent account base by $250,000 per year.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Senator Pappas.
Is the contingent account part of the Human Rights Department? Or whose contingent account is that?
Mr. Chair and Senator, the contingent account is an account that is managed by Minnesota Management and Budget, and it's for unanticipated emergencies or expenses that agencies, that come up after the budget is passed, and they will go through the LAC process to access that funding.
The next item on the spreadsheet is the dealing with the appropriation to the Public Employees Retirement Association. This is related to some of the action that was done in the pension bill relating the MRF account being merged into PARA. And the Senate made a reduction. The base appropriation was $24 million a year. The Senate reduced that by $8 million a year.
And the House bill reduces that the state portion of the aid by $18 million per year for four fiscal years, 16 and 17 only. And then it would remain at current levels in the tails.
The next item on the spreadsheet is Department of Military Affairs. And the department had proposed doing some reallocation. There was a carry forward funds that had built up in the enlistment incentive space. And so they requested reallocation of those dollars into their maintenance training facilities and to their general support area. And you can see that taking place. The other item that was included by the Senate is $1.5 million a year for a local government public safety leave reimbursement grant. And then moving down the spreadsheet, the department also did request a one-time transfer from enlistment incentives to take care of maintenance of training facilities. So that is included in the Senate bill.
And members, I should note that the change item spreadsheet for the House is in error. We do not include the $10 million transfer, internal transfer for the enlistment incentives, but there is a one-time cancellation on line 220, $1.1 million from the enlistment incentives carry forward account, and that is used. You'll see language in the bill that it's in support of the military museum increase and also the Vets Affairs increase.
The next item on the spreadsheet is dealing with the Department of Veterans Affairs. The Senate bill includes the 1.8% compensation adjustment to the program and services area of the department, and then also includes the 5% compensation adjustment to the veterans health care homes area of the budget. The Senate bill also includes the $1 million request for the repairs and betterment related to the veterans home. And we also include language in the bill that increases the appropriation for the cost of care calculation, personal needs allowance, and that's increasing by $88,016 and $110,000 in fiscal year 17. So it's basically adjusting the currently it's $90 per month, and it's increasing that up to $122 in fiscal year 16 and $130 in fiscal year 17, and then having an annual adjustment after that. And the last item there is the military.
Mr. Lundin, Chairman Anderson has a question.
Mr. Lundin, so the last week we received a request from the governor's office for the veterans as an additional item. That's not included in your bill either then, is that correct?
That's correct. And the last item that the Senate included for the Department of Veterans Affairs is related to an appropriation and some legislation that was in the supplemental bill dealing with the military and expedited temporary licensing. And the Board of Teaching was not able, did not feel they were going to be able to expend the dollars that were given to them, the $44,000 for the rulemaking related to this. So we took and canceled the dollars in fiscal year 17 and then reappropriated them to the Department of Veterans Affairs for transfer to the Education Department.
The House bill for the Department of Veterans Affairs includes the $1 million from the general fund for the repair and betterment request. And then also on line 233, you'll see that the House does also fund the original $6.1 million request related to veterans health care operating increases. In this case, the House is funded again from the Special Revenue Fund from a transfer from the CGIP reserves into the Department of Veterans Affairs Special Revenue Fund.
If we turn the page of the spreadsheet, we can run through some of the revenues and transfers in the bill that may offset some of the appropriations we went through. The first under the legislature is the legislative office building parking revenue reimbursement. This offsets the general appropriation because the general appropriation that the Senate included does include the debt service for the parking ramp. The next item is with the Secretary of State with the changes to the business services fees. There was a slight reduction in revenue to the general fund. And then also under the Cosmetology Board, this is showing up the fee revenue. As you may recall, the fees are deposited as a non-dedicated receipt in the general fund, so they need to be reappropriated or need to be appropriated to the Cosmetology Board if they're going to have access to them. And then also the mobile salon regulations. If you look out in the tails, there is $14,000 in revenue, and that's because this particular provision is not effective until fiscal year 18.
And for the House, on the general fund revenue changes, you'll see the $3,000 per year loss in revenue from the business services fees and filing, identical to the Senate. And then also on line 259, a transfer and cancellation in fiscal year 15 of the PEEP appropriation.
The next item then is dealing with some non-general fund revenues and transfers. The ones the Senate includes would be related to the license changes, Class C license changes to the Racing Commission.
And the House bill includes that. Those changes related to the licensing for license changes for the Racing Commission. And then above that, again, you'll see the transfers from that I had gone through before to the Ethnic Councils Fund, from the Campaign Finance Fund, the PEEP funding, and the CGIP transfers are outlined in this portion of the spreadsheet.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Papps.
Ms. Roberts, would you just explain to us again what is the source of funding for PEEP and CGIP, what those programs are?
Mr. Chair and Senator, the PEEP funding was an appropriation made in fiscal year 15 of $294,000 to Minnesota Management and Budget for a health care transparency provision. And that in the bill, that appropriation is canceled in fiscal year 15 and transferred to the special revenue fund.
It hasn't been spent yet, as far as we know.
Mr. Chair.
Yes. Chair Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Pappas, we did our bill, was it just last week? It seems so long ago when we did the bill. And as of April 22nd, that money had not been spent. We received notice today that MMB has backdated the expenditure of that money to back in 2014, even though last week when we checked, that money had not been spent. So I think that's a better question for MMB, and I'm just curious, you know, how often MMB backdates expenditures. I think that'd be a good conversation to have at some point, but not today.
And then Senator Pabst, CGIP?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, members, the transfers Roberts. From CGIP are from the State Employee Insurance Fund reserves. Those are the reserves. The State Employee Insurance Plan is a self-funded plan, and they maintain a certain level of reserves. Currently, the reserve is higher than what the target set by the actuaries would be. So there is a transfer from that fund.
So, Mr. Chairman, I'm just trying to
yes,
understand
Senator
this. So
Pappas.
The House is borrowing from the CGIP reserves, or is that a permanent, is taking the money permanently from the reserves, but then the ongoing council goes back to the general fund?
Chair Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Pappas. What we did is we mimicked what Senator Ranum and Senator Cohen had done in years past. They did this in 2003 and in 2007. There is a surplus currently in the CGIP fund, and we're taking a portion of that surplus dollars and reallocating it here in this bill.
Thank you.
Onward.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. The next is just showing the cancellations on line 278 that we talked about related to the Campaign Finance Board regarding the House, the PEEP funding, and then for the Education Department appropriation. And then moving to the last page of the spreadsheet, it gives the total general fund expenditures. And I should point out again that the Senate numbers and the governor's numbers don't include the Human Rights Department. So you have to take that in account when you're looking at the differences in the bills. And unless Ms. Roberts has something else to add, I think we are done with the spreadsheet.
Good. Thank you. Is there any general questions that we can answer? I'm sure we'll be talking this spreadsheet over for many hours. So,
I have one more question.
Yes, Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And either, I guess, Mr. Lundeen, the last three lines of the bill, of the spreadsheet, bills tracked separately, the elections omnibus bill, LCC Secretary of State. Could you just kind of talk about that a little bit?
Okay. This is a bill in the Senate of Senator Sebens that is sitting in the Finance Committee. And these are some of the costs in there, the $99,000. They were actually counted against the Senate target, so that's why I was showing them on the spreadsheet, and they're accounted for in that way.
So the assumption is that they pass, they're negotiated in this bill?
No, this is being treated as a separate bill.
Separate bill, separate appropriation.
Yep, separate bill, separate appropriation.
All right, other questions?
Mr. Chair.
Yes. Senator Carls.
I have a question on, and it actually is on line 177 on page 4, which is the number that, it's the bottom line on the Humanities Center. You said that line 174 and 175 are in two different bills. 174 is in E12 and 175 is in HHS. Are they in there at the same amount as what they otherwise would be shown here? And I think you mentioned that they're in there, and I'm wondering if the difference in the column that shows the over-under is really $1 million or if it's $1,250,000.
Mr. Lundy.
They are not included in this spreadsheet. I don't recall the exact level of the appropriation. I don't know if Ms. Roberts does. I'm thinking they're probably less than what the House has in, but we were just making note of that as an item that leadership had to sort out.
Okay. All right, thanks.
Other questions? Okay, Ms. James and Mr. Shepherd.
Mr. Chair, the first provisions, will Mark and I, Mr. Shepherd and I will begin on page R31 with Article 2, and Mr. Shepherd will describe the House provisions.
Mr. Chair and members, Section 1 on the House side relates to legislative and congressional districting after the next census, and it states the principle that the legislature won't delegate its duty to draw districts to a commission or a council, and then it lists the principles that will be applied in the next districting, and that continues over to page R33.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair. Everybody understands that Article 1 was what we just went over, so we're on Article 2 now. Okay. All right. I might not have picked that up. All right.
You know, that's one thing I understood.
Good. Way to go.
I thought I'd tell you that, Mr. Chairman.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, the next provision is on page R33 on the Senate side. This provision permits the Legislative Coordinating Commission to appoint staff for the Legislative Commission on Data Practices.
And also on that page, Mr. Chair, on R33, there are two provisions that relate to the Legislative Auditor. The first one in the House side, Section 2, relates to material that is also on page R35 and R36, and this is a House proposal relating to the role of the legislative auditor in the preparation and review of fiscal notes and revenue estimates. So the House has a provision under which the legislative auditor would review the work of executive branch agencies, would be able to accept the analysis or disagree with it, and would then pass that on to the legislature for consideration. There's a separate proposal that starts on the bottom of page R33, which was a separate bill, House File 1694, Senate File 1596, which has the auditor involved in evaluation of economic development incentive programs each biennium.
On page R34 on the Senate side is the standing appropriation for the Senate to pay the principal and interest components of the rental payment that the Senate will pay on the lease purchase agreement with between the Department of Admin and the Department of Management and Budget. Subdivision 1 is for the principal and interest components. Subdivision 2 is a standing appropriation for operations and maintenance payments, also for the new Senate office building. And I apologize, I have a cold and I get a tickle, so I apologize.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Senator
Pappas.
It could
be because of the air quality in the Capitol, the construction zone. A lot of people are sick.
Take your time, Ms. James. We'll be fine.
Mr. Chair, the next provision on the... Oh, I'm sorry, Ms. Gainfield.
Bothered me.
On the House side, on R35 and R36 and R37 is the material I spoke of a minute ago about the role of the legislative auditor in fiscal notes, revenue estimates, and on page R37, local impact notes. The next House provision at the bottom of R37, the very last line, and continuing on to R38, relates to audits of counties, and probably the key provision there is in the middle of page R38, subdivision 3, on the House side, a county audit, or subdivision 2 on the House side, excuse me, a county must have an annual financial audit and may choose to have the audit performed by the auditor or may choose to have it performed by a CPA firm. And the rest of this section explains the procedures if a county chooses to have a CPA firm do that work.
Chairman,
yes, Senator Metz.
Don't they have to have an audit now? How does that work?
I think we'll have Chair Anderson explain that.
So the more people can work, there are different CPAs and others can work.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Anderson.
Senator Metzen, the
German,
issue...
Chairman Anderson, excuse me.
It's okay. We're kind of informal in the House, so it's all good. Senator Metzen, on this issue, what it is there's a group of county auditors. Currently, they are audited by the state auditor, and there are counties that would like to have audit firms do it instead of the state auditor because there would be a cost savings for them. And so this just gives them that flexibility to be able to do that.
Thank you for that. I see that. Thank you.
Go ahead, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair and members, on R39 on the House side, Section 7 relates to the telephone bills that elected officials receive. Under current law, you all have to sign your monthly long-distance phone bill. This provision would say that the signature requirement does not apply to a month in which the person's bill is less than $5. The person would still have to pay the bill. All the information would still be public, but it would eliminate the signature requirement. Mr. Chair, the next set of sections on the House side on R39, R40, and R41 all relate to the same issue. The House bill repeals the state elections campaign fund and the public subsidy program. That's the policy change, and these sections all make conforming changes to that, as do at the end of this article, there's a number of repealers that relate to that issue as well. And that, in this part of the bill, continues on to page R43 in the middle of the page where the House bill moves. There's another issue here. Sections on the House page R43, sections 14 to 23 on the House side, which continue over to page R50. All relate to a rulemaking issue. This is from House File 1261. The key parts are that if a rule has a substantial economic impact as defined on page R43, then there would be a peer review panel that would be set up by the legislative auditor. As Ms. Roberts mentioned earlier, the House provides some money for funding that, and the rule then would not take effect until approved by law. Other key parts, I would say, there are some additional notices to be given, primarily to legislative officials. And then on page R49, there are amendments in the provisions governing challenges in court to rules. And this provision says that if a person is challenging whether an agency has adopting a policy guideline or bulletin without following the proper rulemaking criteria, the
agency can't, if someone challenges that in the Court of Appeals, the agency has to cease enforcing that until the matter is resolved. Mr. Chair, the next house section is on page R50. This is from, it continues on to page R53. It's a bill of that Representative Lane was the chief author of, House File 1353. And this reformulates the councils. It creates a new council on Latino affairs, Minnesota African Heritage Council, Council on Asian Pacific Minnesotans. It provides for the membership, the appointments, terms, and removal, provides for the Legislative Coordinating Commission on the top of page R52 to appoint an executive director for each council. On R52 specifies duties of the council, and on R53 duties of council members, and provides for reporting. And in the repealer section of this article, the current laws governing these councils are repealed. Mr. Chair, the next provision on the House side at the bottom of page R53 requires the Commissioner of Management and Budget to maintain a centralized tracking list of new agency projects that cost more than $100,000 that are paid for from the general fund. Mr. Chair, on R54, the House and the Senate have provisions that appear to be identical relating to prepayment for information technology hosting services. And on R55, at the top of the page, requires the Commissioner of Management and Budget to report to the legislature within 14 days of a budget forecast on uncertainty in the general fund revenue projections. The next two items on page R55 on the House side relate to the legislative auditor's evaluation of economic incentives that I mentioned earlier. The next provision on page R55 and the top of R56 appear to be identical House and Senate provisions relating to agencies limiting the ability to propose fees or fines of more than 10% in a biennium.
Mr. Shepard, are Section 26 and, of the House and Section 3 of the Senate the same?
Mr. Chair, I believe that they are, yes.
Are they? Or at least similar?
Yeah. Okay.
Excuse me.
And Mr. Chair, I believe that Section, on the bottom of R55, Section 4 on the Senate side, Section 30 on the House side, I believe are also identical. On R56, the House has a provision requiring the Commissioner of Administration to provide rehearsal and storage space in a building in the Capitol to the state band. On the bottom of page R56 and the top of R57 is a House provision requiring notice to legislative budget chairs of changes and anticipated cost of changes in state construction and remodeling projects. The bottom of page R57 relates to the SMART program and requires the Commissioner of Administration to provide services under the program to small agencies requesting those services.
Mr. Chair, on page R58, Section 5 on the Senate side and Section 34 on the House side are similar. They relate to an accommodation reimbursement account that agencies can apply to have the expenses that they make to provide reasonable accommodations to employees be reimbursed. The Senate side provides a general fund appropriation that Mr. Lundeen would have highlighted in the spreadsheet. The House has a different method of funding that.
And Mr. Chair, as Ms. James indicated, the House method is that the Commissioner of Management and Budget would determine the amount of money to be deposited in the account each year and would require agencies to make deposits in the account, or if that was problematic for certain funds, they would maintain their own separate accounts.
Mr. Chair, on page R59 at the very bottom, Section 6, and going on to the next page, R60, Section 7, these two provisions are changes to the MMB's grant-making statutes to remove general obligation grants from application under this section. And then Section 7 exempts both general obligation grants and capital project grants to political subdivisions. And I'll do also Section 8 on the Senate side before Mr. Shepherd describes changes to the same statute from the House side. Section 8 eliminates a requirement that the Commissioner of MMB give prior authorization for a grant recipient of general obligation bond proceeds to incur expenses.
And Mr. Chair, on the House side of R60, the House provides that the laws governing the Office of Grant Management and state grants do apply. It strikes the language saying that that authority does not apply to capital project grants to political subdivisions, so that it would apply. Section 36 on page R60 on the House side requires the Office of Grant Management to monitor grants made by the Department of Commerce. At the bottom of page R60, also dealing with grants, the House bill specifies conditions under which grants must be terminated. And on R61, the House has a section providing that an agency cannot charge a recipient of a general fund grant a fee and may not deduct money from the grant to pay administrative expenses incurred by the agency administering the grant. The last section on the House side of R61 also relates to the Commissioner of Administration. The current law authorizes the commissioner to delegate duties to the head of another agency or to a subordinate, and this bill requires that at least once every 3 years the commissioner would audit use of that authority and would also develop guidelines for agencies to protect state legal interests.
Mr. Chair, on page R61, Section 9 on the Senate side makes changes to the Guaranteed Energy Savings Program. It expands the type of project financing that may be used to pay for a guaranteed energy savings program, and also eliminates the specification that utility cost-saving measures become the sole property of the state after a final obligated payment. It also changes certain calculations about the threshold that determines whether the commissioner is authorized to enter into an agreement for a utility cost-savings measure. And finally, it eliminates a restriction that that precludes the implementation costs of the utility cost-saving measure from exceeding the amount to be saved in utility and operation and maintenance costs. And that takes us to page R64, Section 10. On the Senate side, this sets the size standards for small businesses in that applies for preferences in state contracting. It sets it to be the same as is defined in federal rules.
And on the House side of that same page, Mr. Chair, relates to certification of veteran-owned businesses for state small business procurement programs, and it says that before the commissioner certifies that a business is majority-owned and operated by a veteran, the Commissioner of Veterans Affairs must verify that the owner is a veteran.
And at the bottom of page R64, Section 11 on the Senate side, and going on to page R65, is a requirement that organizations that administer contracts for state-funded capital improvement projects that are over $100,000, they must promote the use of targeted group businesses and take steps to remove barriers to equitable participation of targeted group businesses. And then on page R65, on the Senate side, Section 12, and on the House side, there are similar provisions, but there are differences. In this relate to the targeted group business preferences and qualifying for those. And this has to do with the size standard again under the Code of Federal Regulations on the Senate side. And the Senate also gives the commissioner the authority to adopt rules to implement this program.
And Mr. Chair, on the House side, at the bottom of R65 is a provision related to the prior House provision that if a business is going to get a veteran preference, it has to demonstrate that the owner is a veteran. Mr. Chair, the next cluster of sections on the House side, beginning on R66 and continuing on to R74, all relate to the Office of Minute Services, the state's information technology agency, and I'll mention briefly some of the key parts here. On R66 and R67, basically these sections focus the role of Minute on the executive branch of state government, and they strike some duties that relate to collaborating with other entities. On R68 is just renumbering clauses. R69 requires the Chief Information Officer of Minute to prepare a monthly progress report on projects over $1 million, and at the bottom of page R69 limits the ability of the office to enter into new agreements to provide services to political subdivisions and provides some exceptions and conditions to those limits. On R70, it clarifies that that section's effective in this year, but it applies to new contracts and to renewals. On page R71, requires that state agencies enter into service level agreements with the Chief Information Officer of Minute for the IT services, or may obtain some of the services from an outside vendor. It requires agencies to solicit proposals from the office and from at least one outside vendor, and it specifies conditions under which the Minute can obtain services from an outside vendor. The bottom of page R71 authorizes the Chief Information Officer to authorize an agency that's located in Greater Minnesota to solicit proposals from Minute and from an outside vendor separately from the rest of the agency if they have both Metro and Greater Minnesota offices. On page R72, there is a requirement that the Chief Information Officer prepare an annual report on IT spending with specified information. R73 relates to Minute review of projects over certain size. R74 requires the Chief Information Officer to monitor progress on projects with costs of more than $5 million and to report on specified provisions there. R75 on the House side is a new topic, finishing the Minute one. This provides that the total number of FTEs employed in all executive branch agencies may not exceed 35,927, and it gives the Commissioner of Management and Budget some authority to be able to ensure compliance with that requirement. Page R75, at the bottom of the page, is the healthy eating here at home language that goes with the appropriation that Mr. Lundeen and Ms. Roberts mentioned earlier. The next cluster of materials from section all the way from on R76 to R83 all relate to expedited and temporary licensing for members of the military. This is taken from House File 506, Representative Schoen, Senate File 504, Senator Wicklund, I believe, and these relate to six different licensing boards and follow up on some legislation from last year that establishes procedures for expedited and temporary licensing for former and current members of the military and their spouses. That goes all the way over to page R83. Same general issue in each case, and then on R83 is the Senate provision.
Mr. Chair and members, on R83, this begins a set of provisions from the Board of Cosmetology. Some of these are provisions that were initiatives of the agency itself, and then three of these are from a bill from Senator Rest to establish mobile salons. So Section 13 and 14 are provisions from the Board of Cosmetology, the agency's initiative. And then Section 15 is from Senator Rest Mobile Salon Bill right here it just establishes a definition for mobile salon, and later we'll see a section that does some other things to make mobile salons possible. Sections 16 through 21 on page R84 and onto R85 are new definitions that are used elsewhere. Section 22 on page R85 is a new fee structure and some new fees for the Board of Cosmetologist Examiners. On page R87, section 23 gives the board some extra time to act on a license application in certain circumstances, and section 24 identifies those circumstances when the application and when the applicant is the subject of a complaint investigation, or the applicant has pending disciplinary actions, or the application contains discrepancies. Sections 25 and 26 are a similar sort of thing, giving the board some extra time to act on temporary military or expedited licenses in those same sort of situations. And, section 27 on page R88 requires a license to practice as an advanced practice esthetician. That's a term that's newly defined in the earlier section. Section 28 gives the Board of Cosmetologist Examiners the authority to establish rules related to the safety of practitioners and consumers. Right now, their authority is only to establish rules to protect health. Section 29 removes a fee. This is a conforming change because the fee is put into the fee structure. Then section 30, which begins on the bottom of page R88 and onto page R89, adds an additional continuing education course requirement for a cosmetologist license. It also prohibits marketing or the sale of products during a continuing education course, makes some other changes to the continuing education requirements. And then on page R91, section 31, is a sort of a restatement of the licensing requirement to practice cosmetology for compensation. This also eliminates an exemption from the licensing requirement in current law for aestheticians that are practicing in the office of a licensed physician. On page R91, section 32 is sort of cleanup. There's just a clarifying change on lines 39.6 and 7, and then on lines 39.10 through 13, it eliminates a sentence that had no verb and therefore no meaning. Section 33 on page R91 is the second of the mobile salons provisions. This sets up in statute some requirements for mobile salons. On page R92, section 34 is a requirement that an applicant for a cosmetologist school license must employ a designated manager who has a cosmetology salon manager license. Section 35 on page R94 changes the discrimination prohibition for salon schools to make it conform with the Minnesota Human Rights Act. Section 36 is unrelated to the cosmetologist. This is an extension of the Mississippi River Parkway Commission from 2016 to 2020 for its expiration date. On page R93, section 37 on the Senate side is the same as section 67 on the House side. Or not quite the same, almost the same, similar. It's a cleanup from the 2009 law. So it provides for the appropriation to the Office of Administrative Hearings to be paid from a different fund than it currently is. The difference in the language from the House side and the Senate side is that the Senate has specified that the office that we're talking about is the Office of Administrative Hearings, and we did that because legislative office is just mentioned earlier in the sentence, and so for clarity, we made that change, but otherwise those provisions are the same. Also on page R93, section 38, it begins Senator Metzen's bill for the Mighty Ducks. The changes to the statute appear on page R95. It sets some caps, or it allows for grants to be used for air quality, but then it also sets some caps for air quality grants and R22 elimination grants. Section 39 on page R95 is the same as the provision on the House side, Section 88, and these are, this is the one of a batch of sections that came from the Secretary of State's office. Section 39 on the Senate side, 41 through 45, and 58 are all Secretary of State provisions, and they're the same on the House and the Senate side. These relate to the reporting requirements and also the process of what happens when a public benefit corporation loses its status as a public benefit corporation. That takes us to page R98, section 46 on the Senate side and section 95 on the House side. Sections 46 through 56 on the Senate side are the same except for two items as on the House side. These are Board of Accountancy provisions. I'll point out the two differences. On page R99, the very first line, the Senate has an elimination of the words independent preceding the word study as part of the definition for a peer review, and the House did not make that change. And then also on page R103, on the Senate side, section 56, the Senate increased the amount that the board was allowed to fine someone for a violation of law, and the House does not have that provision. And that takes us to page R107, section 57. Oh, all right. Apparently, I skipped something on page R96, which is not related to the accountancy board. Yes, on the Senate side, section 40, this is the first of two provisions that deal with sprinklers, and this precludes various entities from establishing laws that require the installation of fire sprinklers.
And, Mr. Chair, on that same page, on R96, is a provision related to the IRRRB. It strikes a provision that allows the IRRRB to use the Uniform Municipal Contracting Law instead of contracting laws that govern state agencies. It also strikes an IRRRB exemption from one of the laws governing minute services and one of the laws governing the authority of the Commissioner of Administration.
On page R107 on the Senate side, section 57 is the second of the two provisions relating to sprinklers, and this requires contractors to offer to customers the option to install sprinklers. Page R108 on that section 58 on the Senate side and section 105 on the House side is the last of the Secretary of State provisions, and they're the same.
And on the House side of page R108, Mr. Chair, is section 107, which provides limits on railroad condemnation powers over certain governmental property interests, referencing Hennepin governmental entities in Hennepin County, and referencing those bodies determining that public safety or access of first responders would be detrimentally affected by the exercise of the condemnation power. Page 108, 109, and 110 on the House side relates to the Health Insurance Transparency Act, and the change is on page 110, which says that notwithstanding the requirements in a law governing PEEP, school employees and their employers that are insured through PEEP are subject to the requirements of this HIDTA provision relating to purchasing group health insurance coverage. The bottom of page R110 and R111 on the House side, the House has provisions that provide for staggered terms for members of the Metropolitan Council, and then on page R11, section 110, requiring that Met Council members would have to be elected City Council members or mayors or county commissioners. On page R112, the nominating committee for Metropolitan Council appointments is changed to include specified local representatives. And at the bottom of page R112, it provides that the chair would be elected by the 16 other members of the council. The page R113, the House provision, it deals with the Minnesota Sports Facilities Authority and provides that no members of the authority receive a salary.
On page R14, on the Senate side, section 60 deals with the parking ramp for the new office building. The Senate provides that the debt service amount be transferred from the parking fees collected and deposited in the state parking account, be transferred to the general fund to offset direct appropriations made to the Senate for debt service payments on the garage.
Mr. Chairman, are those the debt sections?
No. Oh, I don't think so. Senator.
Mr. Chair, the House provision on that side requires the debt service on that parking garage to be paid by fees charged to persons parking in that garage.
Section 62 on page R115 of the Senate side provides for the Commissioner of Administration to do an evaluation and report about the in lieu of rent payments. And then on page R116, section 64 on the Senate side provides that this is a minute related thing. For any appropriation in this bill, if an agency makes a purchase that requires ongoing services, that those ongoing services be provided by minute.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Senator
My
Pappas.
Question actually was about the minute services section, section on the bottom of page 113 and the top of 114. Those are the ones that look identical to me. I don't know.
Mr. Chair and Senator, yes, those are
those
identical.
Are identical.
Yep.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, on page R116 on the House side, section 114 specifies that the salary of the chair of the Met Council is $61,414 unless changed under the normal process for reviewing and changing the salaries of agency heads. Section 115, which is on the bottom of that page and the top of the next page, says that the percentage increase in salary granted to an agency head appointed by the governor can't exceed the lesser of the increase in Minnesota median household income or the consumer price index. Page R117, section 116 creates a legislative commission on surrogacy, specifying legislative and other members, and requires a report on specified topics back to the legislature by December 15, 2015. Section 1 on page 118, the House and the Senate have language that appears to be identical relating to prohibiting state funds or tax expenditures to fund a new Major League Soccer stadium. Page 119 on the House side limits the increases in state managerial plan employees, the same as I mentioned earlier for the agency heads, to the lesser of Minnesota median household income or the increase in the consumer price index. Page 119, section 119 provides that executive agency spending on advertising and promotions in the upcoming biennium would not exceed 90% of the amount spent for those purposes during the current biennium. Section 121 on the House side relates to transition of staggering terms for the Met Council discussed earlier. Section 122 requires minutes CIO to report to the legislature on reducing CIOs in other state agencies. Section 1, bottom of R119, the top of page R120 is a transitional matter relating to the members and the executive directors of the ethnic councils in a provision that was discussed earlier.
And on page R21, well, the very bottom of R120 going on to 121 is a repealer related to the Board of Cosmetologist Examiners. It repeals an unused definition.
And Mr. Chair, the House repealers, the repealers in paragraph A all relate to the public subsidy program and the state election fund. The repealers in paragraph B are each separate. The repeal of 3.8886 is the Legislative Water Commission that was mentioned earlier. The repeal of 6.48 is the current process governing county audits. There's a new section dealing with that. 349A.07 subdivision 6 is a provision dealing with lottery procurement contracts. And 375.23 is a bill of Representative Anzeltz and I believe Senator Saxhog relating to county road overseers in unorganized territory. The repealers in paragraph D on the House side all relate to the ethnic councils that and are relate to the provision that was discussed earlier.
Mr. Chair, page 121 on the Senate side, section 1 is the first of two Article 3 is the first of two provisions relating to reimbursement grants that would be provided to local governments to reimburse them for paying the salary and benefits of public safety employees who are on authorized military leave. Section 2 on the Senate side, section 62 on the House side are provisions relating to the Support Our Troops account. It expands the permitted uses of that account so that grants can be given to nonprofits and foundations, and those are the same on the House and Senate side. Section 3 on the Senate side on page R-122 is an annual reporting requirement that the Adjutant General already has for the use of the Support Our Troops account, and this provision expands that reporting requirement to require the same reporting of the Commissioner of Veterans Affairs since that account is used by both departments. Section 4 is the second of the two provisions relating to reimbursement for authorized leave on the Senate side. On page R-123, section 5 on the Senate side and section 63 on the House side provide a death gratuity for a service member who is killed as a result of duty. The provisions are different in the House and the Senate side. The Senate side eliminates a requirement of showing of hardship. Mr. Shepherd can discuss the House side.
Yep. Mr. Chair and members, I don't have anything to add to that. We can talk about it later with the department.
Okay. Fine.
At the bottom of page R-123, section 6 and section 64 of the House side, they're very similar, but this does is establishes a bonus program that the Adjutant General can administer to provide incentives for training in certain areas. And the Senate side makes it a requirement, and the House side makes it permissive. On page R-124, section 7 on the Senate side and section 1 on the House side are provisions relating to the Big Island Veterans Camp. They eliminate the guardianship. Well, we'll see that in the repealer later, but they also permit the Board of Trustees to remove a member on a majority vote of the trustees, and they provide for filling a trustee vacancy. The only difference is here is that the Senate side adds something to current language to specify that we're talking about the Big Island Veterans Camp as opposed to other veterans camps.
Mr. Chair, on the House side, on page R-125 and R-126 relates to veterans preference rights upon removal from public employment, and it allows the veteran to request the hearing to be held by a civil service panel, a merit authority, or a three-person panel defined in paragraph C of this section. It also provides on page R-127 that the governmental subdivision would bear all the administrative costs associated with the hearing, and if the veteran prevails, would pay the veteran's reasonable attorney fees. Also, on page R-127, line 73.30 to 31 on the House side, strikes language that excludes teachers from veterans' preference, so they would be included under this provision. The next provision on the House side is R-127, the Honor and Remember flag. It designates it as a symbol of the state's concern and commitment, and suggests that the chief administrator of specified governmental facilities are encouraged to display the flag on particular days listed in the bill.
On page R129, section 8 on the Senate side authorizes the Commissioner of Veterans Affairs to establish a method of calculating a maintenance charge for domiciliary residents, and it sets an amount for a personal needs allowance and indexes it to the Consumer Price Index. And then the section 9, beginning at the bottom of page R129 and going on to R130, provides that the if a resident is behind on their payments, that cannot be used to modify their personal needs allowance. And on page R130, section 10 on the Senate side, section 2 on the House side, are repealers that are identical, and those relate to the Big Island Veterans Camp, eliminating the Board of Guardians, I believe it's called, the guardianship. On page R130, begins on the Senate side, Article 4. Article 4 is a batch of provisions relating to paramutual force raising, and the House and the Senate have identical provisions all the way through here, except for on page R133, on line 66.18, or 19 and 0.20 on the Senate side, and 79.2 through 79.4. This provision relates to allowing the Racing Commission to give licenses for 3 years, and it's my understanding that the House provision provides for those licenses to expire all at the same time, and the Senate does not have that feature. Perhaps the provision within the Racing Commission section article that is most noteworthy is that it provides for a clear description of calculations on the amount of payments that the track has to pay in purses. There was a controversy involving the Running Aces track and the amount of money that they were understanding the statute to require them to pay in purses. And so the Racing Commission has addressed that with the changes in this article, as well as other changes.
Is it Ms. James?
Mm-hmm.
Just if you can go over that piece a little bit for me again. So I have on R133, section 10, there's a difference. And then can you give me what was the other area of difference between the two? Is it just that one piece?
Just that one.
Okay, thank you.
That takes us to the end of the bill.
Everything else is the same. All right. Questions? Okay, well, we passed this gavel back and forth, and it's your plan not to meet tomorrow, right, Chair? Okay. And there'll be a scheduled meeting Monday, but that's at the call of the Chair, so I'm not sure that we'll meet on Monday either. And then Tuesday would be back with Chair Anderson. So with that, we appreciate everybody being here and everybody's attention, and till the next call of the chair, this meeting's adjourned.